Culture. Welcome to Flip the Culture. My name is E. Josiah Kenty. I'm your host of this podcast, and we're going to get deep. We're going to get to the depths of what it means to transition as an athlete, because I've seen it, man, and it hurt me to the core whenever I see athletes not transition successfully, and I was able to navigate through that. And with dealing with kids all the time, man, I see parents try to give their kids things that they never had. But I also realized from seeing the output of what kids are projecting into the world, they're losing what the parents actually did get when they were growing up. Like, what I'm seeing right now is that parents are giving these kids J's, something that they never had growing up. They're giving them steak and lobster, things they never had growing up, right? But they're losing the mannerisms of a correct citizen. Right, that they're losing the self-respect, they're losing the self-identity, they're losing the character of a model citizen, because we have parents that are out here trying to project things that they never got growing up, and they're not giving them everything they actually did have. So with this podcast, man, I don't have all the answers. You feel me? So I'm not even going to give it to you like I have all the answers, but I am giving you something that I've personally experienced, and I'm gonna give you everything I got. And one thing with this podcast, it's not just gonna be me talking. The first two episodes is just you getting to know me a little bit better, knowing my story, and just really centering some of these things out for this book. Because with Overtime, How to Win the Championship, I wrote this out of pain. I didn't know I was writing a book to begin with. I wrote this book on the top of the football stadium after my coach told me that I was no longer the player that he had recruited. And I'm going to get into that story a little bit later. But it started off as a diary. And as a man, when you talk about mental health and how to take care of yourself from a mental standpoint, diary can be, something that people project on women. But it's like, bro, God had put inside my heart, man, write your feelings out, bro. Like, it's not healthy for you to hold this in, because nobody going to really understand where you coming from, bro. So I went to the top of that football stadium, and I wrote what I felt like my heart was projecting. And I actually want to read a little bit of that to you guys. And it's called A Love Letter. It's the second chapter in my book. It's the pregame, right? When you think about pregame as an athlete, you think of preparing yourself for how you're going to perform for the rest of the game. It could be something that's ritualistic, right? It's something you put your favorite song on. You put the tape on your ankles. You put the tape on your wrist. It's a certain way that you get yourself prepared to have the best game of your life. And I felt like this love letter was me preparing and also releasing some of the hurt that I had connected to this game. So I'm just going to read a couple of pages out to you. So playing organized sports is like agreeing to love someone without knowing the love language. One minute you feel as though you are putting 100% into the relationship, then it slaps you in the face without a reason. If the slap comes with the reason is typically not the response you were looking for. I have been slapped so many times by the game that eventually my heart became numb with the expectation that it would only happen again. I laid down my life for something that wasn't meant to be the foundation for me to lay my head. So this never-ending cycle of me falling into a bottomless pit of lies, ache, and misunderstanding and betrayal was bound to come to a brutal end. The only problem with me falling out of love is that I didn't know where to land. So I held on to other people's expectation of me playing the game they loved, because only I knew what this relationship had turned into. I was the only one running sprints at 1 a.m. in the morning until my calloused feet began to bleed from being reopened. The sweat from my mind being overwhelmed developed into tears as I thought about all the people I would let down if we broke up. I would never let it show, because I would be considered weak in the locker room, and the weak cannot survive there. They would never question the sport. I knew they would only question me as if I was the one to walk away first. Any response I would give to defend myself against the abuse of the game didn't matter, because they already had a preconceived notion of how this relationship had turned into. It was easy for people to assume that I am this talented football player with a promising future connected to the game. But what they saw was a facade, because under the pads of a grown man was a little boy, scared of what would happen if I took my protection off. all while putting my body into more anguish. I'm thinking about how my coach is constantly saying I'm not the player I used to be. Did he really care if I had good character off the field when I part ways with the only thing that binds us? Did he care that I would be doing anything else with my time, but I'm deciding to spend it all on a game that's not loving me back? Does he care about the background I come from where many don't get the opportunity? What troubled me the most is that he had the power to take it all away. The lines that developed into yards became a jail cell to the possibility of me making a difference off the field. All my dreams, friends, and most of my support systems were inside these lines. I spent most of my life trying to stay within these lines, and now it's time to separate. I'm not sure what's next. I've since learned that the idea of love binds you from the realizing you're in a toxic relationship. It was only right for me to think this way because I was willingly allowing sports to pervert my paradigm. So those who did not understand my paradigm instantly became haters. It didn't matter if what they said was right. And what was wrong was them not believing my side of the story. How can I develop the mentality that works so well on the field inside of my personal life off the field? I want to be able to win the championship and get my jersey retired. One may ask, how can you do that and never play another down of football? Walk through my journey as a ball player with me as I reveal key concepts and tangible steps that will help you achieve greatness after the final whistle. So I wrote this book, man, out of a place of hurt, misunderstanding. I didn't know where I was going from then. I wasn't able to be who I was supposed to be without leading. I didn't need a role, but it just innately came out of me. There was this situation where my trainer put me on the treadmill one day. I think the rest of the team were doing mountain climbers, and they was doing some kind of squat drill in the rest of the weight room. And the coach just pulled me from the workout and said, hey, hop on this treadmill. He put on the highest incline it can go, highest speed it can go. And he said, you got 30 seconds. If you stop running, this treadmill is going to spit you off to the inside that wall, right? So I'm like, man, what? Like, bro, what you got going on? I'm thinking he's crazy. But, you know, I was like, man, I'm not going to let this circumstance stop me from having that dog in me. So I was like, man, let me go hard and see what happened, right? I don't know if I can do it. I never ran this fast on the treadmill, but I'm not going to let this stand in the way of me, you know, being who I am. So I started running. Kept on going. I was like, man, I don't know if I can make it anymore. Like, it was a battle inside my head. Like, hey, bro, stop. But I was like, nah, I can't stop. Like, and the coach walked away. Like, in inside of an athlete's mind, whenever you get tired and the coach turns his back on you, like, it's almost like you don't know whether or not you should keep on going or you could take a little bit of break because he's not watching. You see what I'm saying? So I was like, I was in that mode. But then I was like, bro, no, like, this is the expectation. I'm going to keep on going until the expectation is done. Like, if this is the goal, I need to do it to the fullness of what he's expecting out of me. So I ended up finishing it. And you know, he had the conversation behind the closed doors with the other coaches and said, hey, man, this is the leader that we've been waiting for. And, you know, that preseason, the coach and also the players, they agreed that I need to be the team captain. So as a freshman, I was operating as a team captain on the varsity team. And the unique story about just Ramsey football at that time is that we didn't have a football team within 35 years from me getting there. Like, we only had four racks. We didn't have anywhere to practice. So we were traveling like 25, 30 minutes across town trying to find somewhere to practice. We practicing in abandoned schools. We practicing inside the parking lots with full pads on. Like, we just had to make it work. In that first season, we went 1-9. The second season, we went 2-8. We getting blown out like 75-13, bro. Like, it was bad. Like, we made chance, and the coaches walking inside the practice starting it off with 75. I still remember the offensive coordinator, Papa Jack, man, loving the death. But, bro, used to kill us with talking about 75, bro. But it was something that was, engraved into our psyche, because going into our junior year, that's when we started making a name for ourselves. And that was the first time that I actually got hurt where I was like, man, this is serious. You see what I'm saying? Like, I jumped up, was playing against Pleasant Grove in Birmingham, Alabama. They was ranked number 2 in the state at the time. And I jumped up, and the guy fell on my knee, and I heard a pop. right? So I'm like, hold on, bro. Something ain't right. I'm getting back up. I can move it. I can move around, but something's not right. And I end up getting the MRI. We end up winning that game, and that put us on the map. With like, it shocked everybody because I'm like, we went from a 2-8 season getting blown out from everybody, and then this happened. But for me personally, that's when I learned that somebody else can be having the time of their life, and I can be going through a crisis, and the perspective is the only thing that's stopping that whole transaction from being different. Like things can happen at the same time. You can see it happening the same way. You see the same event, but you feel different about what's going on. So the rest of the team, they're on a high from winning, and I'm trying to figure out whether I can play the rest of the season. So I went to the doctor. They said I had a sprained MCL. So I'm like, hey, I asked a question that any other athlete can never ask. Like, can I still play? And the doctor said, yeah, you'll probably be out for about 2 weeks, but then you can come back. And so I said, all right, bet. So went out there after 2 weeks. We making names for ourselves, man. I think we lost one game that regular season. Made it to the playoffs, our first time in school history, like up to that point. And then we got kicked out the second round of the playoffs with Gunnersville. That was that was a game where I felt like we still should have won. It still got some in me, man. But but I realized from that standpoint that, you know, how to play through injury. So I nursed it back. I felt like I was good. And then that offseason, I ended up going to play a 7-on-7 for a 7-on-7 team. And I jumped up again, came down, heard 3 pops in my knee. I was okay. It swelled immediately, went to the doctor, torn ACL, and I re-tore my MCL. So I'm like, man, I got 3 scholarships at this time. I'm committed to this D1 school named University of North Carolina, Charlotte. And I'm like, I don't know how to navigate through this, right? So all while I'm learning how to transition through just injury, I'm trying to lead the team as well while I'm dealing with this. And I'm still having to go to school. So like we gonna talk about the depths of this, bro. Because like I have this stuff going on personally, but there's still an expectation for me to operate outside of the sport. Like, I always told myself if I was losing on the football field, I got to go out and win in life, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I can't lose in every area. Like, you got to be a dog somewhere, bro. Like, a dog might not have his day with, you know, going in and catching a bird. But a dog gonna have his day playing fetch with his owner. You know what I'm saying? I might not be able to catch the bird, but I can catch his bone, bro. You know what I'm saying? Like, I might not be able to catch the bird, but I'm gonna make my owner happy, bro. You know what I'm saying? Like, a dog gonna have his day one day, bro. Like, he gonna catch the bird one day. But until he catch that bird, he gotta still be a dog. And I feel like that's the mentality that I had to go into. So I'm like, I ended up having to decommit from University of North Carolina, Charlotte, because they changed the way that they were recruiting me. They were going to gray shirt me. And I'm like, bro, what is a gray shirt? Like, I know about a red shirt, but a gray shirt, bro? Like, what? Y'all just making up junk. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, I learned how to navigate through that. So I had to start from scratch. So I ended up getting more scholarships, you know, after playing through my senior year. And I ended up signing to go to Murray State University. After I signed to Murray State University, went for the first time. You know, I loved it being in Kentucky, man. It was just different because I'm from Birmingham, Alabama. I didn't realize that there was a world outside of just being a city boy. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm from the city, but, you know, you could probably tell the way I talk. I'm country at the same time. So we call that contretto, country and ghetto, you know, mixed together. But living that lifestyle of just wildlife, that, like, there's nothing around Kentucky nothing around Murray State other than you know, deer and squirrels. Like, so it was a different environment for me, but I felt like it was going to be good for me. And it was. So I went up there. My second week of fall camp, I tore my ACL, LCL, MCL, and partial meniscus tear. So on the same knee. So now that put me in a different perspective. Like, bruh, what in the world is going on with me? Like, and when that happened, again, I jumped over the pile. Somebody made a tackle in front of me, and I heard 4 pops inside my knee. And when I fell, I knew exactly, like, this is not good, bro. This is not good. But before that, like, I knew something was wrong in my knee before that experience, because we were doing a drill a couple of days before that. And I remember going to the doctor, and they drained my knee. He saw blood. He said I had a sprained ACL. So I was like, okay, I got a sprained ACL. Can I still go out there and play? And this is when I was, like, fighting for a starting position. Like, I'm balling at this time on what he said was a sprained ACL. And one thing about colleges, man, like I said, we're going to get real in this thing. Colleges want to prolong your life on the field. So sometimes they may see the truth on the scan, but they're going to tell you something different so that they can get the most out of you. So you might have a broken bone. But if you say you can walk on that thing, like, they gonna try to find a way for you to continue to play on that broken bone. Especially if you tell them that you okay and they see that you can have a little bit of mobility, like, they're gonna find a way to get the most out of you. And a lot of times it comes to the detriment of the player, and that's not good. That's not good for the mental health of the player. It's not good for the physical health of the player, but it's good for the team, right? And that's just the business of it. They just wanna get the most out of you. But realize from an athlete standpoint, know your value, and your value is being whole. So if you know you can't go, because they tell us as a young age, man, there's a difference between being hurt and injured. But what I learned is, like they can see that you're injured, but then mental toughness and them trying to push you back on the field, they're going to operate as if you are hurt. You're the only one to know that you're hurt or injured, especially if you a dog, bro. I'm not talking about the ones that get a little, oh, nigga, it's hurt. Nah, bro. Like, you know for a fact if something's wrong, bro, especially if you've been there before, if you've been hurt before. So I knew I've been hurt before, and I knew I couldn't go, but I was in my mind, I'm like, bro, I'm only hurt, because I'm like, if I'm injured, then I know what the possibility of this injury is, which would get me off of the field. And with me being from Birmingham, bro, like, we have this ideology that we have to make it out. Like, everybody that comes from an inner city, like, especially if you are a black athlete, bro, like, you're going to have this mindset of making it out. It don't matter if you got a two-parent household. It don't matter if you have a one-parent household, if you living in poverty, or if you eat steak and lobster every single day. Like, for some reason, society has pushed it inside of young black athletes that you need to make it out, bro. And that's not a healthy way of looking at things, because when you make it out, you almost do anything to stay out. But it's like, what do you make it out? What do you make it out of? Especially if your imprisonment is inside of a game that is not loving you back. You see what I'm saying? Like, you're following something. You're following a blueprint in a unhealthy way that doesn't have an end, not your projected end. So it's almost like you have a blueprint of an unrealistic outcome of a game, and in that blueprint, you can't really see clearly, and it puts athletes in a position where people are telling you about a plan B, and we're gonna get into that as well. But people tell you about a plan B, and nobody's life that ever lived their life from a plan B is attractive. Like, I've never seen somebody tell me that I should have a plan B, and I look at their life and it's attractive. It's like, bro, if you live your life based upon plan B and I look at your fruit, bro, I don't want that result. So that's why a lot of athletes don't listen to people say plan B. Like, a lot of athletes that has made it successfully through this transition, they will all tell you that plan Bs are for idiots, bro. Like, we know, bro. Like, you're not finna tell me to have a plan B. And I see successful people and people that are serious about their life and they're convicted on this one thing and they get their fruit. Like, bro, you got leaves on your tree and it don't even got fruit on it. Like, you just putting on like you about something and you not. You know what I'm saying? So when I found out that I was injured and I tore four ligaments in my knee, I had a decision to make. And I ended up making it back on the football field. And I played special teams that following season, not the season where I tore everything, but the following season I played special teams, made the traveling squad. And that following spring game, man, I had two interceptions, one touchdown, three pass breakups, and four tackles. The best game I ever had in my life, and I had about 32 snaps that I played. So it was like I performed higher than what they projected me to. And I've quickly found out through an exit meeting that the coaches had made decisions behind closed doors that no matter how I performed, they were like, hey, bro, you out of here. And during that exit meeting, the coach told me that he didn't think I was the player that he recruited anymore. I felt like I was a good locker room guy. These are his words. He said, man, we think you're a good locker room guy, but we just don't think you can get the job done. That's the business of it. So I'm like, okay, from your perspective, you think I can't get the job done, but what I did on the field just last week, like, that's not getting the job done. But I had realized that from a business standpoint, during the recruitment stage earlier that spring, they had already put that scholarship into another player and was projecting for me not to play the way that I did on my way out. So I was like, man, I don't know what to do, bro. Now, my freshman year of my, like, right before everything went south with my knee, I met this lady named Susan Guest, and she was on the Board of Regents. And she met me inside of this, inside the cafeteria, and she was like, hey, I really like your smile. Do you want to be my adopted Murray State son? I'm like, bro, I have a mama. Like, what are you talking about, right? But I was like, man, let me take a chance, right? Let me not get inside my head. Let me take a chance on just being your Murray State son, see what happens. And at that time, I didn't know that she was actually on the Board of Regents. And that's like the step up under the president. And these are the people that make decisions on behalf of the university. So I, you know, she made sure that I was good, man. She advocated for me in so many ways. And after my scholarship was in jeopardy, she made sure that the university acknowledged the impact that I had off the field, because I was doing things on campus that was helping with retention rates. Like, I was making sure that students were good, their well-being, their mental health. Like, I had programming on school grounds where students were able to come as a safe place spiritually through this organization named Ransom, Radical Athlete and Student Oasis Ministry. And I was able to give students a safe haven on adding value to the university. With navigating through the problems that college students go through. Because when I first got to college, I was like, man, I can't connect with nobody here, bro. But I knew what I came from at home, right? So I've always had this thing in me that if I don't see it, I'm going to create it. Like, I feel like I always was that person. Like, I was like, man, I might have to do it scared. I might not have a blueprint. I'm just going to create it and see what happens. And it's always been impactful for people inside their life. And I've always did it in a selfless standpoint, because I'm like, bro, I'm not getting anything from this. I'm losing sleep. I'm losing time. I'm not getting paid for none of this, right? But I care enough about the student body that I want to provide something to them that will give them restoration and healing. I was doing events on campus that were bringing people together from the community standpoint, the university, and also just the student athletes. And Ms. Guest made sure that the university acknowledged that, and they gave they provided me a scholarship that surpassed my academic performance and also just surpassed my athletic ability. And it was like, hey, like, if you choose to pursue football outside of this university, we can't promise you a scholarship at another university. But if you stay here, you know, you stay involved with the athletic department in some capacity, we want to make sure that that you stay here and it's seamless for you. So I was able to stay on full scholarship, man. And like that right there taught me a valuable lesson, is that I don't need a plan B. I don't need a plan B. All I need is a work ethic that when I give my all in every single situation that I put my hands to, I'm able to navigate successfully, and opportunities will come up to be able to sustain me within that plan A. Like, my plan A was to come to that university and play ball. But through opportunities of me playing ball, I utilized those platforms that they provided me while I was in that space. And I transitioned smoothly outside of that space. Like, I'm going to say it again. I went there to play ball. I had to go to school. So I did well enough in my grades, because me being on scholarship without playing football, they had to take a look at my grades, bro. Like, so if I was just bombing the classroom and I wasn't performing the way I was supposed to, they would be like, ah, Kenty, like, we wanted to make this opportunity for you, but you're not taking care of your business in the classroom either. So I had to make sure I was making sure my grades was good. I had to make sure that I wasn't getting in trouble in the field. And my trainer, Coach Otis Leverett, always told me that you can become a better man, and it's going to make you into a better football player. But becoming a better football player will not guarantee that you're going to be a better man. And I always carried that with me. Like, that's the essence of who I am. I have to always find that. I have to navigate through life trying to become a better man. Because everything else I put my hands to, the value is because of the man inside of me. That, like, put my value inside of a football and put my value inside of singing, put my value inside of acting, put my value inside of a skill set, right? That's not going to always be a guaranteed transaction that you're going to get success inside of your personal life. Like, those intangibles, being respectable, being honorable, being trustworthy, like those things that makes a man, that's what's going to open up opportunities that's connected to you. So I learned that with the transition, and that's what I want to provide to you guys. When I wrote this book, Overtime, I had to come up with a concept, because I'm like, bro, I got to make this plain, man. With being a teacher, I wrote this on the eighth grade reading level. And with writing things on the eighth grade reading level, I had to do a case study, man. And I realized that a lot of Americans, most Americans, read on an eighth grade reading level, meaning that comprehension skills are not that well. So when you think of reading, it has a big compass when you think about it. You got to read, but you also have to understand what you're reading. So with me being an educator, I see a lot of arguments inside the schools with kids that are not on grade level. Why? Because they misunderstand people's what people are trying to communicate with their body language, with the way that they communicate, how they communicate, and what they're actually saying. And then we see that into adulthood as well. So with this book, I wanted to remove the barrier of misunderstanding by putting it on an average level. It doesn't mean that it's less impactful. It just means that on the base level of understanding, the average American should be able to read this. So I came up with a concept, and it's from the four downs, right? We call it hard four. So if you were able to play football growing up, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Hard four concept comes from when you remove extra first downs and you got to score within four tries. So with that first down, you set the tone. Second down is run the play. Third down is reestablish yourself. And fourth down is finish strong. So when you have this hard for a concept, there's no first downs except for the first one that's presented to you. And a lot of times that's what happens in life. You got to make, you have to take advantage of the opportunity that's given to you, because you may not get a second chance. You may not get a renewed first down. And that's what I learned through my process. There were certain opportunities I was too late. I was too late. Delay a game. I ain't make it. Like, it's gone. And I realized that a lot of times, man, when you get that delay a game, like, it's only a certain amount of delay a game you can get until you don't have any more yards to lose. And that touchdown doesn't leave, right? Like, your goal doesn't leave. It's just that opportunity to maximize where you currently are is gone, and it's setting you back. So you have to play catch up based upon your inability to be able to move forward with a plan. So it's like, bro, it's not that the opportunity was delayed. I was delayed on moving on the opportunity. So I wrote this book on this hard for a concept, and I had to be real with myself, knowing that when you have hard four downs, you have to be very strategic in how you move, because you got to take a chance, but you also have to be strategic, because you know that you won't get another opportunity like this. So this hard-fought concept can be applied in life as well. So we're going to get into a little bit about what that is later on in the podcast. And then people on the outside think you're good when you're an athlete. But you've got discipline, you've got confidence, but on the inside, it's a storm, and no one's handing you a playbook on what's next. So I was talking to this Marine one time, and he said, when in a crisis, you always resort back to your lower level of training. And that stuck with me, because as an athlete, when you train, you do things repeatedly, so much so that when you get into a game, when you're tired, when you're fatigued, when you don't know what, like, you don't know what's going on, but you just do things that you practice. Like, if you don't practice it, bro, you're going to resort back to your lowest level of training. And if your lowest level of training is giving up, you're going to give up when those bullets get to flying. If your lowest level of training is blaming your teammates when things get tough, then you're going to find everything else to blame. If your lowest level of training is self-doubt, then you're going to doubt yourself when things get tough. So I learned that from talking to this Marine, and I'm like, bro, inside of life, a lot of athletes, when they transition out of life, however they train with where they put their most time into, they're going to resort back to that lowest level of training. And it could be something as small as not finishing through the line. Like, you want to run through, and you're always the one that the coach says, hey, we need to start over because you didn't finish through the line, and you put the rest of the team in jeopardy. Your lowest level of training might be not listening to the coach and doing your own thing because you felt like what you know is better than what that 20 years of experience coach was trying to put inside your head to do. Like, that's why I wrote Overtime, because it started with a conversation with myself. It's like, bro, if you reach overtime, that means that you did just enough to stay in the game but not enough to win. I'm going to say it again. Reaching overtime means that you did just enough to stay in the game, but not enough to win. So every single life I'm living, every single day I'm living my life like I'm playing for the championship game. I have to find a way to win. At the end of the day, what you did through them four quarters, it was good. But in overtime, the stakes are different. The rules are a little bit different. It's a little bit more exciting. Your heart beat a little bit faster because you know that everything you do is more costly. I realized when I turned 18 years old that the judicial system treats me a little bit different than they did when I was 17. I know the stakes are higher. I knew when I bought a house that if I don't pay it, it's a little bit different than I was staying underneath my parents' roof. I realized that it's a little bit different when my gas tank running on E and I'm not in the back seat in the car seat no more. I'm actually the driver. So I realized it's a little bit different when the stakes change, when the field changes, right? So I want to talk about a little bit of what is Flip the Culture. Flip the Culture isn't just a brand, it's a movement. It's about changing the way we talk about success after sports. It's about ownerships of our identity, your story, and your future. It's not about just transitioning, it's about transformation. Whether you're becoming an entrepreneur, a teacher, an artist, or just figuring out day by day, you're still a competitor. But the game is different now. It's internal with external consequences. The battle is internal with external consequences. When I got done playing, I got my degree in criminal justice. I didn't know that's not what I was going to do. Like, I thought I was going to be a special agent, but I did this internship that I found out quickly that's not what I wanted to do. So when I did this internship, it was with the United States Postal Inspector Service. Great opportunity. I thank all the people that was a part of that department. I thank Murray State Criminal Justice Department as well. They really did great with supporting me through that process, man. But I found out quickly that that's not the trajectory I wanted to put my life down, because during that time I was developing a personal flat platform of people that were expecting things from me from a value standpoint. And I had to talk about things that the people were expecting from me. I talked about injustice. I talked about faith. I talked about all types of things. And even to this day, I talk about things that's real. And I know that people without the platform expects for people like myself to be able to voice. So I did this internship, and it was this simulation I had to go through. If I were to talk to my therapist about it, he probably would agree that I have that I got PTSD from a simulation. It was that real and raw. So I was going to this postal office, and I had my partner with me. And my job was to make sure I had his six. I had his back. So he went, he said, hey, man, make sure that I'm going to engage everybody, but just make sure you watch the hand movements. Make sure everything is, you know, everything is smooth. If things escalate, go through your progressions, right? So I was like, okay, bet. I'm going to remember my training. I'm good. So we got to the postal office. We got a call that there were some intruders there, about three individuals. And when we got there, there was a Latino woman there. It was a black male and a white male. So we approached them. We asked for identification. The black male gave the identification. The white male gave his identification. And then the Latino woman gave some pushback. She was not being compliant. So she was like, hey, you want to see who I am? You want to see who I am? That, like, for real? So she pulled her wallet out from the back of her pocket. And for me, I knew my only job was to make sure I had my partner back. And all I saw was a black object. I pulled my gun out, shot her three times. When she fell, I saw that it was a wallet. So I was in shock. I'm like, oh my God, I just shot an innocent woman, bro. So then the black dude pulled out an actual gun and let off one shot. Now, at this time, I didn't know he let off one shot, but I shot him four times, right? So he's dead, she's dead. And when they look back at, you know, how everything transpired, I had a gunshot wound to an internal, to an organ where I would have bled out and died as well. So I'm like, bro, this too much. And there was another simulation that was similar, and I made the wrong decision. So I'm like, bro, like, and this is in 2019. This is like during like Black Lives Matter and everything, black men getting shot in the street, man, and people protesting and stuff like that. So I'm like, yeah, bro, I this ain't for me, bro. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't live with that on my conscience. So I made a decision there. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was deep in my degree. So it was no turning back. I'm like, bro, I got to finish the degree, but I just didn't know what I want to do. So I ended up going into my profession of education. So I've always been good with kids. I always had a heart with kids. And I was like, man, what if I got on the front end of the judicial system instead of being on the back end of it, of enforcing the law? Like, what if I can get in these kids' head at a young age, inspire them to be everything they're supposed to be, and prevent them from making the biggest mistake of their life? So I ended up becoming a teacher. My first year teaching, I won Teacher of the Year. My second year teaching, I won Outstanding Middle School Educator of the Year Award. And I realized from being an athlete, man, I was like, bro, I'm not going to let something that I've never gone into or without having the training to actually do it, because I didn't go to school to be a teacher. I was learning as I was going. So I'm like, I learned that with me being a football player, if I'm first in the drill, with me being inside that leadership role, I'm like, if I'm first in the drill and the coach say I'm supposed to do this drill, it doesn't matter if I've never done the drill before. I have to make sure I watch it first, mentally go through it in my head, and then execute it within 10 seconds. Like, I got to pick it up and go, because as I'm learning, I know I got people watching me to do the example as well. So I may not get it right, but I'm going to go hard and see if that's it, good things got to happen. Like my coach said, always go hard. If you go full speed, good things going to happen. Like, if you don't know where to go, at least knock somebody out. Like, I played safety. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I took that mentality and put it inside of my job, and good things happen. I was like, man, I may not know this curriculum because I haven't seen this stuff. Like, and unless I was in the seventh grade, like, I haven't seen some of that material for 13-something years, right? So I'm operating as a special education teacher trying to teach the kids how to learn this stuff, and I would be inside the general ed classrooms taking notes from the teacher, asking the teacher questions, and then 10 minutes later, I'm having to reteach this to my special ed kids. So I'm learning with them, and I was also real with them. I'm like, hey y'all, I ain't gonna lie, Mr. E, like, I'm learning with y'all, bro. Like, I don't know this either, so if I were to get a grade on this, I'll probably get an F and y'all will make a C, right? So I'm being authentic in my walk, I'm being authentic in my learning process, and that actually built a strong relationship with my kids, because I never wanted to put on like I was something that I wasn't, because at the end of the day, if I put on like I wasn't something, people are going to want to see fruit at the end of the day. Like, so I would encourage anybody that's out here being something that they're not, you're going to get exposed, dog. Like, life is going to expose you, because everywhere you go, if you put on like you're something, there's going to be an expectation that you want to meet. And the realer and the bigger that expectation is, man, people are going to want to see fruit, dog. And if you got leaves, like, hey, a leaves without fruit is a cursed tree. I'm telling you, bro, it's people out here starving for value. And it's a disservice for those that put on like they not something, and people got their hand out for fruit, and all you give is leaves and twigs, bro. It's a cursed tree, dog. So anybody that you have a drive or a vision to be something, be authentic in your walk, man. Like, if you don't got it, bro, just be thankful for what you do got, and then find a way to get it. Be a hustler, be a grinder, bro. That's what the grind is for. Like, at the end of the day, if you say you got 10 offers, bro, to play ball. You got 10 offers to play ball. You telling everybody you got 10 offers. What's coming? Your senior year. Around February. Signing day. You can't hide, bro. Like, I learned that. Folks, everybody saying, y'all got 30-some offers. I got 20-some offers. But then signing day comes, you can't even sign the one. It don't make sense. You're going to get exposed. You are. So be real with your walk. Within closing of this episode, man, I appreciate y'all for rocking with me today. The next episode, we're going to dive into just what it means to transition. Like, what is a transition? Because inside the game of football, man, there's transitions all over the place, but there's distractions in the game to make it seem like there's not a lot of transitions. And I feel like we live in an entertainment type of society where every time there's a transition, there's a commercial that comes up and it takes you away from the fact that there's a transition happening inside the game. So if you don't transition successfully, man, there's some things when those lights come back on, it's going to be detriment to you moving forward inside of your life, just like it is inside the game. But don't let society fool you in thinking that everything is just sunshine and rainbows, bro, because it's not. It's not. Quarters exist so that people can transition successfully. Halftime exists so that people can transition into the next phase. Like, that's all it is. So we're going to talk about transitions on the next podcast. But look, make sure you like, subscribe, rate, review, leave comments. Do whatever you have to do to get the word out about this podcast, man. We're going to have different type of guests on here, man. I don't like talking. Like, this episode and the next episode is going to be the most that you ever hear me talk. But I'm going to have people inside these chairs that's going to give value to you, because I want to be able to use my platform to get the word out on how to navigate through your own personal transition. Like, I go into the schools and I get my message out that way. This podcast is not for me, bro. The only way we're going to be able to flip the culture is if we flip our lives first. We got to make sense of our life through the sport that we've given so much time and effort to. I've seen it inside of my own life. I've seen it around the people inside my circle. Flip the culture, because the culture don't change until we do. Coming to you live, Flip the Culture Podcast. See you next time.